Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
So we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Yeah, we did. We started to burn many things we found. That's the Divine Dar Williams singing so beautifully with Pete Seeger and David Burns, the Solartopia song. We are in a 2 days after mode here, or a couple days after the Arizona primaries, along with a couple other states in the West that went for Bernie Sanders. But we saw images coming from Arizona that, you know, it was deja vu all over again. So one of my guests, me and Bob Petrakis, living in central Ohio, mile-long lines waiting to vote, 4.5 hours waiting to vote. And we know that this is purposeful. We know that the people who run elections have the power to and the option to put as many or as few voting machines in as many or as few precincts as they choose. And clearly in Arizona, somebody decided that they didn't want a giant voter turnout that was going to be able to vote. And we think we might have an idea who. I've got three fantastic guests today. I know it's a technical challenge, guys, with four of us on the line. So I'm going to ask you to talk, and then when you're done, just sort of give a pause. And we'll go basically in the order of Randy, Bob, and Brent first, then Bob, then Randy. We have Brent Blackwelder and Randy Hayes, two longtime stalwarts of the environmental movement, tremendously great activists, sophisticated. Oh, Bob's not here yet, okay? Well, when Bob calls in, we'll get him. But we got Brent and Randy, right?
That's right.
Yes.
Okay, buddies. So we'll start with Brent and then with Randy. You guys have been at the forefront of the environmental movement since before I was born. And I don't think that's true, actually. But
no, 1891 is when I started my career, and
right.
About 10 years later, Brent was born.
And that was in the coal mines of West Virginia, the both of you. So what we want to do, you have indicated, you circulated some stuff on election theft and election protection. So I'd like to hear, Brent, and then Randy, what you've got in mind about what happened in Arizona this week, and then B wants to tell us what you're about to do. So Brent, and introduce yourself, Brent. Give us some of your background, because you just have been a spectacular persona in the environmental movement all these years, and I'm really, really happy you're moving into the election protection realm. So let's hear it.
Yes, my background was actually in mathematics, and I thought I'd spend my whole life teaching math, but the pollution in Washington, D.C. was so bad at the time of the first Earth Day 1970, both air and water pollution, that I went out to see what the first Earth Day was all about, if it would help. And I was so impressed with the material from Friends of the Earth that I volunteered and ended up becoming president of the organization several decades later. And in the interim, I took a strong interest in saving great rivers and was the founding chairman of American Rivers. Today, we've expanded that protected river system from 8 in 1973 to over 250 rivers today. So the U.S. is actually in a good category here for change, namely protecting outstanding rivers, much better than being number one in people in jail, for example.
Yes, and we owe that to you. We owe a lot of that to you, Brent Blackwelder.
It's a combination. You know, thank you. But it was a really widespread grassroots movement because almost every valley was being beset by the Army Corps of Engineers or other kind of construction operations that would totally rearrange their rivers and streams. and people of diverse backgrounds uniting and getting together and sharing strategies helped make those victories possible. What I wanted to talk about as we look at elections is new ways of cheating on elections or skewing the vote or flipping the vote, you might say. I grew up hearing about Mayor Daley of voting the graveyards if extra votes were needed, and Lyndon Johnson, another Democrat, talked about you always had your most favorable county or precinct reporting last when you know how many votes you needed to win. That way of dealing with election cheating has been materializing in recent years with voter IDs that are very stringent. In Kansas, people were getting calls saying, be sure to bring proof of home ownership before you can vote. That's a tough one.
Huh? Amazing.
And we've seen one. Other kinds of intimidation of poor and minority voters and so forth. The voting machines you referred to in Arizona was something that has happened in Florida. We've seen that progressive voting areas such as the University of Miami has very few when the election comes around, and so the long lines and so forth. Arizona just repeated that. But I don't want to talk further about those. These are important. But I want to talk about the ability to electronically transform vote totals from what they actually were, and then to get out of the system so that you leave no trail behind. And I'm talking about hacking.
Well, we call it flipping. We look at the strip and flip regime where you strip people out of the voter rolls, and then if that's not good enough, as you said, like Lyndon Johnson waiting till the last precinct, then you flip the vote count, which is what was done in 2004. So hacking, flipping, either one will suffice, Brent Blackwearer, and proceed. Tell us what you got.
Yes, well, just a couple of examples of one of the problems, which is we saw in Virginia when the governor in the last election went to vote and the machine wouldn't work and register his votes. And he really got mad, but he was in a position as governor of Virginia that he could order the state agency, the Virginia Information Technology Agency, to look at these voting machines. They were the win vote machines primarily, but agency was able within a few minutes, under 3 minutes, they said, to actually hack in to the voting machines. And as you said, once you're inside, you can delete people from the voting rolls. You can flip totals if you've got an ongoing count and so forth. And so once that report came out a year ago, last April, they banned the use of these machines. And it was not a trivial action because about 25% of the state's precincts were using these machines, this kind of machine that was so easily hacked. And that's not alone. I'll give you one other anecdote from the District of Columbia, which had trouble with voting machines in 2010. They weren't functioning right. They couldn't get people to the voting. When you tried to touch them and make your voting come up for a certain candidate, it wouldn't. So they got rid of the machines, and to test and make sure that the new ones would not be so subject, they actually offered a reward to anybody who could hack into these machines, could get $25,000 if they were the first to do it. Well, what happened once that went up, people got interested to see what they could do, and a professor at the University of Michigan and some students began to work. And within 36 hours, they had hacked into these new, brand-new D.C. voting machines. Once in, they left the calling card so that if you, for example, Harvey, if you went to vote on one of these machines and you punched in your votes, it would play the University of Michigan fight song. they want to make sure they knew that people knew that they actually broken in, and they had. But they noticed something else very disturbing, which was while they were in there, they looked around to see who else was trying to hack in and how far they had gotten, and they found two other countries, China and Iran, had gotten through the first set of barriers. And
oh my God!
Yes. So we are actually looking now. We've seen these nations around the world trying to hack into all sorts of federal agencies and so forth, and they've been successful. They even hacked the director of the CIA's email. So what reason would we have to think that they aren't interested in who wins elections and who would be most favorable to them or whatever? So they are trying to get in, and given the capability of hackers to get in, this is something that we should be paying attention to. Do you want me to stop now, or do you want me to go forward with the strategy or plan for this particular election year?
Well, I'm going to come back to you. Is that all right, Brent?
I hope I've whetted people's appetite to see there's a new form of cheating going on here, and we better get serious about it.
Well, actually, Brent, that's really, first of all, I went to the University of Michigan, and Bob, my next guest, is from Michigan, so we're glad to hear that our fight song has been broadcast on the voting machines. I read somewhere that somebody actually played Donkey Kong or Pac-Man on one of the voting machines. I mean, it's ridiculous how easy it is to hack in, and we need to know, of course, and Bob Fetrakis, my co-conspirator on seven books on this, knows that you can take a electronic voting machine and pretty much make it do whatever you want. And at this point in time, because most of the electronic voting machines in the United States were bought with money from the Help America Vote Act, which was passed in 2002, most of the voting machines in the United States are at least 10 years old. And I'm sure everybody out there is working on a 10-year-old PC or an iPhone that's 10 years old. But what it means is that these machines are ridiculously easy to hack. We're talking with Brent Blackwater and Randy Hayes, two great environmental activists who are both now working with us, Bob Fetrakis and I and another crew out there on electronic voting and voter fraud in general. And I want to propose before I lose track, guys, that we have a conference in Washington, D.C. in the near future, and that we go over these in D.C. and that we podcast the event. I think it's well overdue, especially in light of what happened this week in Arizona. So, Randy, if you'll hold on, I want to bring Bob Fetrakis on. Bob is my co-author on six or seven books. We've lost count on electronic and other means of election theft. And Bob, you and I were actually having some seller's remorse because it looked like in Arizona somebody read our descriptions of what was done in Ohio 2004 and just flipped over and did it in Arizona. What do you think?
Well, I'm blaming it on you. I think it was your idea to write Ohio. They pulled off the crime here in Ohio, and it looks like it was a primer. I mean, I was having flashbacks there. I mean, everything we outlined in that book that we thought, was done by the evil row of, and Republicans was done on behalf of Hillary Clinton. But, yeah, I mean, the stuff was so replicative of what Ken, Blackwell did in 2004, right? The long lines, you shrink and cause confusion at the precincts, and you don't have enough machines. And, of course, you make sure that the poll books are completely out of date or there's computer glitches that assign people to wrong parties. In a closed primary, you don't let them vote. But now that's the exact game plan we complained about so heavily in our book on Ohio.
Yeah, it was really deja vu all over again. And I've been getting emails, and I'm sure you have too, from people who showed up at the polls in Arizona, and either they weren't on the books anymore, or like happened to me in Ohio 2004. Or they were, shifted over to other parties. And then watching CNN, we saw them handing out the dreaded, legendary provisional ballots. which, as you and I both know from Ohio, generally goes straight into the trash. And, you know, this was clearly to the disadvantage of Bernie Sanders. We don't have direct evidence, and maybe you do at this point, that Hillary Clinton did this. But
She didn't do it, somebody did it on her behalf. You know, the political operatives that are so loyal to the Clintons, along with the superdelegates. I mean, this was done to benefit her. And the other option, you know, whether it's not the political operatives, it's the private companies, right? When you allow private, partisan, for-profit companies to secretly program your poll books, your voting machines, your central tabulators, you might as well just get a big neon sign and say, hack this election. No other democracy allows private companies, partisan companies like Seidel and ES&S and Triad to maintain their machines and secretly program everything from the electronic poll books to the voting machines. It's really absolutely unacceptable. I wish Raul Castro would have brought this up with Obama and say, look, your country just came out last in the world among democracies, and they didn't deal with the key issue. You've got private people that control everything in your computers.
So basically, you know, we had Barack Obama in Cuba, and I did put a piece up this. It's at Free Press, I'm sure, and at reader-supported news about you know, what right does the United States have to yap at the Cubans about human rights violations? We have 2.3 million people in prison, and our elections are a joke. Jimmy Carter, the former president, what did he say? Do you remember exactly, Bob, about our elections?
That we're not a functioning democracy. He told Der Spiegel, you know, it's that we're not a functioning democracy.
Well, certainly after watching what happened in Arizona, and we, Bob, you and I have talked on this show with Richard Charnin, who did the numbers and claims with great scientific backing that Bernie actually won the Massachusetts primary, even though Hillary was the official winner. And the polls, as I think you and I discussed, Bob, the polls showed in Arizona that Bernie was up 9% before Election Day. Is that right?
Yeah, when I saw that number, you know, at the time I said, they're going to jack Arizona. You know, she can't lose all three, just like she couldn't lose Massachusetts. And, you know, it would have been bad to lose Illinois. I mean, that one's within 10 points. You know, it's got what I call the Karl Rove line. It's below the Rove line. It's not double digits or more. So what they're going to do, and it proves to be right, is gaming the system, which gets easier and easier. You know, when you've got companies like SOE and Seidel, this move towards the electronic poll books, which we've warned about in the Free Press. In fact, I was just going over, Seidel has all the tools it needs for election fraud. I voted on November 7th, 2014. I mean, these companies are all tied up with the intelligence complex in terms of software, et cetera. And these are the people that are running our poll books in the country. ES&S, the last time we investigated, was owned in part by the Omaha Herald Tribune, which is owned by Warren Buffett. You got incredibly wealthy people. You know, we, in 2012, we made news when we turned up the links between former people at Bain Company and the Romney family hedge fund in Hard Inner Civic. I mean, what sort of country allows these privatized entities to secretly program our elections?
Right, and the Romney family had direct and indirect financial ties to the company Hard Inner Civic. They had the voting machines in Cincinnati that really, if it had been a close election, could have turned the election to Romney and away from Obama. And you and I both reported on that. And for our trouble, we were both blacklisted by Daily Coast, which hasn't run any of our articles since. There you go. Okay, so Bob, stand by. Now, Bob and I have, by the way, have written, we are about to publish a new book called The Strip and Flip Selection. of 2016, Five Jim Crows and Electronic Election Theft. I think that's our seventh book on election theft. And this one is basically set up to be a primer so that people can, it's PowerPoints, basically, which I understand are somewhat obsolete. And I don't like to use the word bullet points, but we have, a couple hundred paragraphs basically on the history of election theft and election fraud in the United States and how it's going to play out or could play out in 2016. And I want to point out, if in fact Hillary's people are jacking the vote counts here and stealing the nomination from Bernie Sanders, there's nothing to stop the Republicans from doing the same thing to her in November. So, forewarned is forearmed. Randy Hayes, standing by. Randy, you're my old buddy.
That's right.
And I know you don't want to be seen with me in public, but this is radio, so we can admit to that. And
in a dark, dingy bar, it's okay.
Yeah, right. So tell us what you and Brent have in store for us in dealing with this issue in the upcoming election.
Well, let me say that you ask about the Arizona, turnout, and Bob speculated that it could be friends of Hillary that wanted things to go badly for Bernie Sanders in that election. But, Bob, couldn't it just have easily been people who realized that Sanders polls better against all of the Republicans? And, mm-hmm. and since we don't know who did what, it's just speculation in those
right,
terms.
It is.
It
and
could
it
be the Republicans
be somebody,
as easy as it could
it
be
could
the Hillary
be somebody
people. Why
very
did you,
wealthy that prefers Hillary, and, there's no knowledge that they'd have to have, But you're right, it could be it could be, in fact, exactly what you said. We don't know. I don't think
because
I'm hard-pressed to believe Hillary was directly involved in it, but, somebody out there is doing her favors.
Right, or doing themselves a favor, and she's just a pawn in the process. But we just recently heard about Iran supposedly hacking a hydroelectric dam in New York. So it could be that it's beyond
it's
Republicans
not out of
the in
question
the United
that
States.
It could be
some some country around the planet that's not too happy with the U.S. 500 years of colonial history, but
is worried about Donald Trump for that matter. Now it clearly. I mean, that's the problem with the system. The system.
Yeah, and hence why Brent and I are. We're going to focus on a limited part. We know that there's lots of people working on the things that Brent mentioned around voter IDs and the things that. Around too few voting machines and long lines and that sort of thing. But we're particularly concerned with the hacking aspect of it. And to that end, I think I'll supplement Brent laying out the basic agenda between at least now and November, what we're going to do. And then if there's time at the end, we can look at the fact that there's still, I think, about six states that don't have paper ballots to back up, an election recount. But
we got the whole hour here, so we got plenty of time. Let's hear what you guys have in mind. I would point out that there are six key swing states in the coming election, Florida, North Carolina, Ohio, Michigan, Iowa, and Arizona, where you have a Republican governor. And in five of them, you have a Republican Secretary of State. There's a new kind of apparatus they put in Florida, but there's not much to stop the GOP hacking the key swing states that could turn this election. So, Brent Blackwater, let's hear what you guys have in mind about dealing with this issue.
One of the key things that could happen is that the Department of Justice could utilize some of the $19 billion that is in the budget request for cybersecurity to conduct certain definitive concrete steps to make it tougher to hack these machines. You mentioned how easy they are to hack. I mean, one is you've got to do the audit for vulnerabilities. You have to harden passwords. You have to put in firewalls and computers and so forth to take machines offline. All of these things, you've got a ton of cybersecurity experts because businesses have been trying to hack each other's trade secrets, and then in recent years, more and more countries are trying to hack into agencies, defense agencies, and look for government contracts and this and that and plans. So there are people that know how to counter this. And if we could get some mention of the urgency for making sure that we have our best hacking preventers budgeted and pledging to help, this might actually help safeguard the 2016 elections.
So you're looking to lobby the Department of Justice to get involved on this? Brett, that the courts have ruled, at least to my knowledge, and maybe I'm wrong on this, the courts, to my knowledge or understanding, have ruled that the software on these electronic voting machines is proprietary, and that the companies actually are protected from being surveilled or whatever by the government, even by the localities that may have bought the machines.
But there's no reason that you couldn't take some of those steps, that the department could not take some of those steps that I just mentioned. What we have in this Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, is someone who has a track record of trying to flag for the public attention the seriousness of hacking into everything. And what we need to do is make sure that she says we're also concerned about voting machines, not just trade secrets or other kinds of things, or the CIA director's email, which has been hacked, but we're concerned that the voting does not get hacked. So they could actually go quite a distance, and the mere fact that this would be publicized might scare off some of the potential hackers for getting caught. So that would be one thing that could be done.
That's an interesting angle. I think at this point, since we do have some time, I want to let Bob Petrakis, my co-author and co-conspirator here, explain what happened with the patch that the Attorney General of Ohio tried to put on the machines during the Romney race, and what the consequences of that was. Bob, can you talk about the lawsuit you filed in the middle of that election to prevent the patch?
Yeah, that was in 2012 on election morning. I filed both a federal and then followed with a state suit, and the state suit was the one that was kept open and could serve as a deterrent. But again, under Ohio law, you're allowed to do an experimental software patch, but usually it's one precinct is allowed to do it on. The Secretary of State, in a secret contract a month or so before the election, contracted to do 44 counties in Ohio, including every urban center, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Columbus. And these were custom patches for supposedly to help media reporting. They were done by ES&S. And this was the same pattern that occurred in Ohio prior to 2004 when patches were unannounced. ES&S operatives and maintenance people showed up and put on these special patches that were never really bid out or even asked for by the counties. So in that situation, we actually brought in my Michael Donahoe, the former 37-year veteran of the NSA, who pointed out that all these custom patches to allow the media supposedly to get information quicker, there was free download stuff, is that it made no sense. But what it did allow to happen was that the Secretary of State would be getting all of the statewide data on a private server from all of these counties, the 44 that were targeted, before anyone else could see it and before they were entered into the system. So it allowed, gave him tremendous information in a political race, and also gave whoever had access to that, like the private contractors that J. Kenneth Blackwell hired in 2004 from GovTech, Mr. Michael Connell and Jeff Averbeck from SmartTech, and the Triad family, the Rapp family, would give them tremendous power to actually alter an election.
Now, I should, and I want to point you, Brent, I think what you're talking about is very sound and very important. And, you know, since 2004, we've had continuous experience with this in Ohio. In Ohio, it was the swing state, and Bob and I, for God knows why, I happened to be living in Columbus. But in 2012, we believe, you know, there's this famous moment where Karl Rove was on national TV, and he clearly expected Ohio to go for Romney. And we believe, and then he was extremely disoriented and disgruntled and actually angry when he was told that Ohio was going for Obama, and he refused to believe it. We believe that he had expected the passes that the Republican Secretary of State, John Houston, in Ohio was administering to the system. I mean, clearly, those patches would have allowed the Republicans to flip the vote count in Ohio with really no trouble and no detection. So this obviously is the kind of stuff you're going to be looking for. And of course, the most amazing, the most important of all the flips was in 2004, where John Kerry was leading Al Gore. John Kerry was leading George W. Bush by 4.2%, over 200,000 votes at 12:20 at night, and then suddenly there's a stoppage of the flow, a so-called glitch in the reporting system, and at 2 a.m., an hour and a half later, suddenly George W. Bush is up by 2.5%, more than 130,000 votes, and eventually wins the election. We know that that was flipped, and we know who did it. And we have a pretty good idea how it was done. And, you know, that was the changing of a president, and that could happen again. Now, whether the Justice Department is going to be willing to get involved on a level like that to prevent something like that from happening, that would be a great accomplishment. Randy Hayes, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I think, Harvey, you and Bob have raised an important point about these patches being done at a state level, but I think Brent would argue that calling for federal oversight, you know, I mentioned that, you know, a subset of the $19 billion cybersecurity budget at Department of Justice could be used to really work with all 50 states and work with, sometimes is on a quite collegial basis and other times it's on a quite suspicious basis for good reasons, as we all know. But I think that federal oversight through a Loretta Lynch, who has shown interest in this election security and even greater interest in the larger film of cyber, larger field of cybersecurity. So we just need to get them attending at the election level and not just having that $19 billion be more corporate welfare to protect corporate secrets that are probably destroying tropical rainforests and indigenous peoples around the planet for somebody's personal profit.
Brent, do you want to add to that? Brent Blackwater?
I was just going to say, one point is that there's some evidence presented in the book Code Red by Jonathan Simon that if you take a look at Romney, and you all have done great work in pointing out the fraud going on in 2012, that Romney was benefited by the electronic hacking and shifting of votes there, not enough to win, but that was happening. And in the 2008 election, he was harmed by other hackers hacking votes away from candidates and over to McCain. So it can be done entirely on the Republican side. It could be done on the Democratic side. It could be done by other countries. But we know
the Green Party
might
do it.
What?
The Green Party might do it.
Well,
yeah,
it's
right.
so easy. And I think you all have done great work, and you made a good point on how old some of these machines are, and agency that deals with election assistance, the Election Assistance Commission, has pointed out in a report how old the voting machines are, because, as you said, in 2002, that commission was established to be a resource to help, and they Congress did appropriate $2 billion for new voting machines. But now those voting machines will be more than a decade old, and a lot of breakdowns and so forth can occur. And so there's a real opportunity here to make sure that our best in cybersecurity don't allow ineffective, defective, hackable, easily hackable machines to be in motion in the 2016 elections.
Well, I got to point out, and I'll turn it to Bob in a second, that in the bigger picture, Bob and I have put forward the Ohio plan, which is we want a universal automatic voter registration. In other words, when you turn 18, you can get a voter registration card at the BMV, the motor vehicles, at your high school, you know, at the draft board, God forbid, at the grocery store, wherever. Anybody who turns 18 should be automatically registered to vote. And those records should be kept. They can be kept to a certain extent electronically, but there has to be a paper poll book that everybody can trace. Then we want a four-day weekend, a Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, national holiday for voting so that people don't have to take off work and aren't caught in these ridiculous long lines. And we want universal hand-counted paper ballots where, that we don't have to be talking about the Department of Justice getting involved in software issues. And we should point out that Ireland had voting machines and got rid of them. So they have paper ballots. Germany, Romania, Japan, and Canada all have universal hand-counted paper ballots. And that's really, you know, where we should go. We want the ballots, of course, to be printed on hemp paper or recycled paper. If they're on hemp, they can be kept. And it should be kept a minimum of 2 years, all federal ballots. Recounts should be automatic. You shouldn't have a losing candidate should not have to pay for a recount. That's ridiculous. And no photo ID. Voter fraud is a felony, and we have no indication that anything the requirement of anything other than a signature is going to be a problem, frankly. Bob, did you want to jump in on that?
Well, I mean, part of the problem, I think, that we need to come forward with, and why I think the Ohio plan, the move towards paper, but it is an interim plan until we can get there. I mean, the fact that we don't have really any random audits, or they're not even moving towards open source, is worrisome. For example, some of these companies, people forget, in 2012, all of the overseas voting with the ability of CITL to plug into 36 mainframe computers, this company that's from Spain is essentially counting and inputting data on mainframe, central tabulators in key states, and they're not an American company. And when we tried to contact them, they were at a private residence in Virginia. And after we published the picture of their, you know, CITL's U.S. headquarters, they moved to some industrial, you know, park, a rent office in Baltimore. And then they've now purchased SOE out of Tampa to show that, they have an American component. But I went down to talk to these people, there's no marquee on the front. There's no mention of them. I went into the building and talked my way in. And, I was told that they only do, quote, custom work for government, which is primarily, a lot of it is these poll lists that went so bad in Arizona. And they referred me back to CITL, wherever it was now located. We know the world headquarters is in Barcelona, Spain, for what they called, quote, specialized election work. A lot of these companies have all sorts of ties to the intelligence community or to very wealthy people in special interests. That's why it opens up who is, in fact, could hack. A lot of these people could hack, and they own a lot of different software. For example, it turned out that CITL owned Carrier IQ, the famous spyware software.
The CITL, Bob, is spelled S-C-Y-T-L, is that right?
S-C-Y-T-L, S-E-L, Seidel.
Yeah, Seidel. And then, you know,
and the free came out of the Free University of in Barcelona.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you all are calling attention to really important facts that people need to know of about how widespread the cheating, the crummy machines, the kind of intolerable things. The fact that we don't have paper ballots that can be audited and audited trail is something when the average person thinks about it, we insist on audits that are publicly observable and so forth for all the companies and nonprofit organizations. We all have to have these audits publicly available, inspectable and so forth by either government agencies, Securities and Exchange, or by foundations who might give nonprofit organizations money. They want to see certified full audits. And yet in the election process, we tolerate no paper trail at all. And in so many places, it's a total outrage. I like your plan. I think that and the idea of a conference to tie a lot of these things together and push for a broader agenda is important. We've got many allies all over the country that want to get to honest elections. And I mentioned one of them is a mathematician in Kansas, Beth Clarkson at Wichita State. And she was doing her own verification of some of these reports that were reporting irregularities. And she found in Kansas elections that there were innumerable, very odd things that happened, some real anomalies that troubled a mathematician. And so she filed a lawsuit to get the records because they wouldn't give them to her so that she could perform an analysis of these and see what you could conclude as a mathematician. And they refused to give those to her, but she went to court, and the court case has been heard. It's on appeal now, but it illustrates that for some reason, and maybe we know the reason, people that are in charge of elections don't want to be audited or checked, especially in these sensitive precincts. And so they're going to great depths to try to deny people stuff that is demanded in every other walk of life where there has to be an audit. There is a publicly observable one.
Well, Glenn, I'm afraid I've got a story for you. In 2004, I was denied my absentee ballot, even though I lived in the same house since the 1980s. And after four phone calls, I finally got a ballot by telling them I was with the media. But after the 2004 election, Bob was our lead attorney. We filed the King Lincoln Bronzeville federal lawsuit. And we requiring, under federal law, all the records of a federal election are required to be held until the next congressional election for 2 years. So we got in under the deadline. We won a federal court decision from Judge Algernon Marbley requiring the 88th County Boards of Election in Ohio to produce and send to Columbus all election materials related to the 2004 election. And by this time, we had a Democratic Secretary of State, Jennifer Bruner. She set up a repository in Columbus, and when it came time for the delivery of the 88 counties' materials, 56 of the 88 said they had nothing to deliver. In direct violation of federal law in a presidential election in the state that decided the presidential election. 56 out of 88 counties. One of the counties, the Board of Elections said to me, a coffee urn spilled on all the ballots. So one of them said that they mistakenly put all this stuff out with the recycling. No one was ever prosecuted. So even though, thanks to Bob and the team of attorneys, we won our federal court case, there was never a recount of the 2004 election, a presidential election in Ohio that decided the race. Bob, do you want to add to that?
No, but let's be fair. They said that coffee craft was a 20-cupper, so it could conceivably destroy 20,000 ballots. But here was the key question. By Ohio law, the ballots were supposed to be in an area, a voter vault, with two keys that could only be unlocked by a Democrat and a Republican. All I can think of is the price of coffee was so high that they had to make the coffee and protect it along with the ballots. But that's the absurd nature of these stories. And there was Youngstown, Ohio, where the ballots were recycled by a waste management company with alleged ties to organized crime. How in the hell they got into the voter vault again when this stuff was supposed to be protected, I don't know.
Well, a lot of the ballots wound up in graveyards in Chicago. Randy, do you have Randy Hayes, you want to jump in on this?
Well, I think this statistical analysis is of great import. You know, Brent mentioned his mathematics background, and he and I've taken a little bit of a look at the recent Kentucky election, where the favored Democratic governor lost in an upset at the tail end, and good old Mitch McConnell won again. I'm personally sorry to say, but we have at Foundation Earth, you know, which is the think tank in D.C. that Brent and I created and work at. Our subtitle is Rethinking Society from the Ground Up. And I think the greater conspiracy going on, or actually really it's not a conspiracy as much as it is greater concern, is this increased disgust with public governance so that people won't participate. And that also happens at a number of levels. And around this election vote count security, if we don't get a handle on this, you know, it's just going to contribute to that dilemma. And what we're seeing with younger generations and even older generations is kind of throwing the public governance baby out with the dirty bathwater and not being involved in that. And the evil empire, however you describe that to yourself, has got to be rejoicing at that. And so these things are of great consequence. We really do need to look systematically on that. We at Foundation Earth are going to look at what we can do in terms of Loretta Lynch and the Department of Justice putting some serious budget and money to help all 50 states at least do the simple common sense steps of really secure firewall, or, you know, at least much better firewalls and much better, you know, codes and such, some of the simple, straightforward stuff that you can do even if you can't get at that proprietary software, as was mentioned. And then we're looking at the next 2 years in terms of now in the midterms, and we want to see things like you know, the six states that don't have paper ballots get the paper ballots. But I really hope you guys are successful with your sort of electoral platform procedures for the state of Ohio. We need a state to really champion that entire sort of set of ideas that you threw on the table, and then maybe we could get people replicating that throughout the country in all 50 states. You know, I'm putting down a little list of who could be the problem creators here, and I count seven in the sense of we've mentioned that it could be sort of the federal government, you know, and it's that controls sort of the CIA kinds of operations. It could be rogue CIA people who aren't really controlled by any government. It could be private billionaires. It could be the Democratic Party, the Republican Party. It could be a foreign government, or it could be organized crime. You know, and so this can happen at so many different levels, and we are becoming so fragile. Amory Lovins years ago wrote a book called Soft Energy Path, and that's Solartopia that Harvey's written about. You know, that's where your energy systems are decentralized and renewable and pliable, flexible, hence Soft Energy Path. But Amory also wrote a counterpart book called Brittle Power, and we as a society have become very, very brittle in terms of our dependence on these electoral systems. And that paper ballot idea is probably the most important one that's been thrown on the table today.
Brent, did you want to jump in, and then Bob?
Yes, I think what we're talking about here is central to our democracy, and every issue that we care about is being affected. We seem to be getting lots of good turnout and then not having it recorded as accurately, and thus it can be frustrating for all of the campaigns that are underway, whether they're issue campaigns or election campaigns for public office. And so this is cutting to the real guts, and I think we need to have every organization that is public interest supporting paper ballots and an auditable trail. That is the one way to get at and diffuse this kind of hacking, if you do it right.
Bob Petrakis?
Well, I think one of the points that, you know, that we ought to look at, and I think both guests have made, is the algorithm factor. Yeah, it does appear, you know, what Clarkston found at Wichita State when she's looking in Kansas. We found the same pattern here in 2004. That is a deviation from the exit polls, the expected vote, that is occurring in large urban settings and metropolitan settings, where often Republican candidates are systematically picking up, you know, 5%, 7% more than they should be. So that's and again, the question is, well, how's that happening? And the question, it's the same thing with the old Willie Sutton, why do you rob banks? I mean, why would you be putting in these algorithms that seem to flip votes or pick up votes in these urban areas? Because that's where the votes is. That's where the easiest place. Lou Harris, before he died, you know, had came into Ohio and talked to Bobby Kennedy. Kennedy actually wrote an article for Vanity Fair, which they never published. And he said, you know, Ohio is one of the dirtiest elections in history because it was so easy to see where they stole the votes based on the exit polls. So now they're doing it, you know, all over. Originally it was in the battleground states. And it's really up to us to put something in place. And even, you know, we should insist on paper, audible paper trails everywhere, even if we don't get in our perfect solution right away this year. There's no reason why there can't be a 3% random audit, and that every single system can require paper that can be audited.
We can't proceed. There's really no democracy possible in the United States with electronic voting machines. I mean, I once talked to Ronnie Duggar about this, and there was a hearing in Columbus, Ronnie Duggar from the Texas Observer. And basically, they knew exactly what they were doing when they put in electronic voting machines. Electronic voting machines are perfectly designed to steal elections. You will never have a reliably audited and manageable and accountable electronic voting system. It's just never going to happen. Until we get to universal hand-counted paper ballots, you know, it's just we're being played here. Let's put it that way. And so, you know, and I got to tell you also the history of this very briefly. We all know the 2000 election was stolen. There were all of two reporters who really got to the story. Greg Pallas, who reported on the stripping of the voter rolls in Florida prior to the election, and Bev Harris, who talked about the electronic aspects of it. And then Bob and I, since we happened to be at Ground Zero in Ohio in 2004, reported. And I got to tell you, we're attacked by the Nation. We're attacked by Mother Jones. We're attacked by, you know, all sorts of people on the left. And we got ferocious response from the Democrats. The Republicans didn't care. We were accusing them of the election. It was the Democrats who attacked us. And neither Bob nor I can get on public radio or public TV in Columbus, Ohio, to discuss any of this. And this is already, you know, from 2000 to 2016. So we've had four of these elections, and we are reasonably certain that three Senate seats were stolen, U.S. Senate seats, in 2014, North Carolina, Alaska, and Colorado. Randy, you mentioned the governor's race in Kentucky. I mean,
yeah.
This is on presidency. This is throughout our system. And, you know, until we really get rid of this electronic theft, which, as I say, Germany, Japan, Canada, Ireland, Romania, they do it with hand-counted paper ballots. We want a national four-day holiday. We want the votes and the polls run and the votes counted by students and senior citizens. Paid $15 an hour. You know, we make a national party of it, and that's it. But 2016, you know, this is a crapshoot, guys. I mean, you know, anything can happen in 2016.
Yes.
I guarantee that no matter what is done, when push comes to shove at midnight on election night, after the votes have been cast, John Kasich and John Houston, the governor and the secretary of state of Ohio, can make that vote count anything they want, and no one is going to be able to stop. And if you can come up with a solution to that, well, we need to talk about that. We need to have a conference in D.C. because, you know.
Well, Harvey, say a bit more of what you'd like to accomplish at that kind of a conference.
All these issues have to be on the table. Bob and I are coming out with a PowerPoint presentation being a week or two. We're just about done with it. You know, all the way from slavery and the original Jim Crow through what we're expecting in 2016. And
but
people,
does it lay out a 10-point plan of like voting and hand counting and the basic things you've mentioned?
Bob, you had a plan for monitoring the vote in Ohio. Do you want to talk about that real quick? Bob, take us.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, please. And you got to be quick because we're almost out
of
time.
Yeah, now I'm part of. We had a 50-point consent plan. We put this out before. A lot of it is stuff that's very simple. Is that you have to use paper. You have to be able to audit it. And for the stripping and flipping of votes, really stripping the voter rolls, we had simple stuff. Like if somebody gets expunged, which we hopefully would outlaw, if you're deregistered, you have two people have to sign it from different parties and actually state a reason. Ohio, between 2004 and 2008, purged 1.25 million people really without any explanation of why they were purged. And in a computer age, why anyone would be purged from a computer instead of put into, say, an inactive status makes no sense. Why are you kicking people off the voting rolls other than to manipulate and destroy democracy?
So, listen, guys, we're almost out of time. Randy and Brent, how do people get in touch with you? What's your website?
Yeah, our website is the organization is Foundation Earth, and sort of technology and this kind of public governance issue is one of about six main issue areas for us. The website is the three letters FDN, an abbreviation of Foundation, FDNEarth.org.
Okay, great. And Bob, you're at freepress.org as always, and we will have this, anything else? Well, that's
let me just say very quickly that I was disturbed to hear that it was the University of Michigan fight song. I went to college at Bowling Green in Ohio, and I would really, I'm not encouraging any hackers out there listening to, if they were to do this, to play a fight song, but if anybody did, it really should be in Ohio, a Bowling Green or Ohio State or something like that.
Well, we'll play the Solartopia song. You guys were great. Thank you. Next week.
Did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.